the mass, I watch the swirl of smoke from candles burning, while Mary looked up yearning. I got confirmed and I confessed, I really felt that I was blessed. Plus I love my uniform, so did the boy who lived next door. But something changed when I became of age, and all those things I thought were true, someday I'd break the big taboo. Oh, let it go, oh God. Let it go, oh God.
Hello and welcome to Digital Free Thought Radio Hour. I'm Dotter Five and I'm here with River. Say hi, River.
Hello.
This is WOZO Radio, 103.9 LPFM, live in Knoxville, Tennessee. And this is a live atheist call-in radio show. And we'll be talking about atheism, free thought, rational thought, humanism, and sciences. Conversely, we'll also talk about religion, religious thought, religious faith, God's holy books, and superstition. And despite what Steve Martin will have you think, there are some atheist songs, a lot of them. And you'll be hearing some of them right here on this program and generally on the station as we have them in rotation. I'll also be talking about atheist and rationalist groups that exist here in Knoxville and how you may connect with them. And did you also know that there was an atheist call-in television show broadcasting right here in Knoxville and has been broadcasting for over 6 years? We'll be talking about that too a little bit later on in the program. So, Riv, you brought a topic for us tonight. Would you mind getting into it? I think you have a friend who you've been talking to a lot.
Right. He's a good friend of mine. I've known him for years. Met back in college, and he's a good guy. I think of him like a brother, but he claims to be very open-minded and follows evidence wherever it leads, and he's very knowledgeable about a lot of things. But he's a devout minister, and you know, the Church of God, Christian.
Mm-hmm.
I try to talk to him about things, try to bring up topics, mm-hmm. and there's always an answer for it.
Yeah, it's always hard to have a conversation when you take one polar opposite from somebody else. So he's a preacher who doesn't really believe that Christianity has got it right. Is that correct?
Right. Well, he basically has it that all the other religions are essentially just misunderstood, and that they spread orally and through culture and through over time, elders and etc. Eventually get back down to the Gilgamesh, all of it culminating back to being Christianity.
Yeah. Would you tell the audience what you mean by Gilgamesh?
Well, there's an old tale. It's one of the oldest.
It's about the oldest story in mankind
we
have.
And I don't know all about it, but what I do understand about it is it's the tale of someone who wanted to essentially become immortal, right, when they live forever.
Isn't it about two brothers?
Right. I forgot that part. You probably know a little more.
Well, I've watched the video on YouTube. If you'd like to know more after the show, go to YouTube and look it up. But we'll try to flesh you in a little bit here.
So basically you have someone who sets out, right, across the world and has all these adventures. And there's I don't know all the details. There's a flood story. It's one of the origins of the flood story.
Mm-hmm.
That is turned into different things.
Sure.
Yeah, and you get a lot of the things that you see traces of them in other religions to follow.
Like the original hero story.
Right. Yeah, that's what comes to mind is the original warrior, the original hero.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. But the thing about it is, he's saying that all of the religions, or at least Christianity, flows from Gilgamesh, but Gilgamesh is just a story too. We have no proof that that ever actually happened, that it was just an old story that people used to hand down. So he's basing one set of superstitions or fables or what he called myths on the earliest myth, and then saying, this is true, and I can trace it back to the earliest myth, which is kind of strange for his position for him to hold.
Right, that's the defense that comes up when I ask about, well, what about the older religions? What about Hinduism, which predates the basics of Christianity? Because Christianity, right, you have the books cobbled together, and over time it changed. books were left out, added to, edited, et cetera. But eventually, even the oldest ones, essentially, everyone got it wrong, and it's just misunderstanding, and it's speaking to people and how they can understand it, and Christianity eventually got it right.
Yeah.
Somehow.
Well, the thing about it is, he thinks that Christianity is the correct religion, but he discounts pretty much all of its claims. I don't understand that. How does that work?
Well, when I bring up some things, such as, one of them I've heard is, was it that, there's a counter truth that he has, is that man came before the trees, and the trees came before man.
In the Bible?
In the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I just mention that, a cursory overview of them,
mm-hmm.
is that, well, trees, man, they're all beasts.
They are.
They're all beasts.
I would always think that beasts would be under the animal phylum, and plants would be under the other.
I would think when I mentioned Pharaoh and tempering with free will and hardened the heart when he was ready to let them go, not long into the stream of curses that display his power.
Yeah.
It the answer I get is, well, he was raised up with the potential to do great things, but his heart was hardened. That doesn't mean his free will is tampered with, although I think it does.
I think it does. You know, if a guy was going to make one decision and God steps in and hardens your heart so you make a different decision.
To test them. Yeah.
That is tampering with your free will.
Yeah.
I mean,
any.
And not only that, but in this particular case, it cost an awful lot of people their lives.
Right.
That's monstrous.
And
he would do that.
Well, it goes further when I pressed a little bit, not more recently, but I pressed earlier on the same thing, and I asked about it, and, well, how would that be, how is that justice? How is that, you know, the kids, all the genocide, everything involved in it, and it was, well, that was the foundation to basically accept all the Gentiles into, it was essentially a mass-wide, you could call it, sacrifice to accept all the races of Gentiles.
Who? Jesus' sacrifice?
Right. Well, basically, because you had the Jews and the Gentiles.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And his take on it is that from Egypt and from all those of Pharaoh, the firstborn of every household, that was all part of the plan to essentially bring in the Gentiles into, you know, essentially they can be with God.
And he has no biblical references for that. He's just making that claim outside of the Bible.
I think he was just kind of going to make sense of it. And
I couldn't
follow him on that. I wasn't sure how to.
Well, you can't. I mean, if he's just sitting there making claims and expecting you to buy into them, which is par for the course for many Christians and Christian leaders, they just sit there and make wild, outlandish claims and look at you like, say I'm wrong, prove me wrong. You know,
right.
Type of thing. When the burden of proof is on the person making the claims, but they don't expect the people that they're talking to have that kind of knowledge about it.
Yeah, and Orrin Raw, I think, makes a good point when he said that faith is auto-deceptive, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the longer you're into it, you will talk yourself into arguments that you wouldn't normally say.
You'll rationalize it.
Right.
Yeah. It's basically faith is giving you license to rationalize your way into believing something that you wouldn't normally believe. Who was it that said faith is pretending to know something you don't know until later it feels like true knowledge? You know, Peter Boghossian, maybe?
There are different people. One of them was faith is pretending to know what just ain't, or something like that.
Pretending to know what you don't know. I think that was Mark Twain.
Mark Twain, yeah, that's right.
I like Nietzsche. Frederick Nietzsche says, a casual stroll through a lunatic asylum proves that faith does not mean anything. Because those people are typically full of the faith that what they see and what they believe is true, and they end up in a lunatic asylum.
It's one of the things I mentioned was, is there anything, I asked them, is there anything that faith cannot bring you to?
Mm-hmm.
Anything. A belief in the, I said, there's a unicorn living in, invisible unicorn in the uniform. I have faith, I'm just there, therefore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is there anything faith can't prove? And he said, because faith comes through obedient. What is it? Essentially, faith comes through obedience within the Scripture. So, which seems more like
the Scripture. Is he talking about just the Bible then?
Or the Bible.
What about the Scriptures that bring faith to Muslims, or the Scriptures that bring faith to Hinduism? How does he explain that? I mean, you can believe any religion is true simply by having faith that it's true. That's why faith is not a good guide to knowledge.
Right.
I mean, it's, you cannot depend on it as a guide to anything.
Right. You can just, it's like that card, that just faith.
Oh, faith is incredible.
It's incredible. You can believe anything with
that's
it.
That's right. Yeah. And if you think about it, the word incredible is there for a purpose. You know, it's not credible.
Yeah. In, right.
Makes sense. Yeah. It's dual, double entendre.
Yeah. It's just any time I try to bring up a topic, there's always an answer for it.
Mm-hmm.
And as I mentioned, when I try to make a point about something, what I say doesn't always come out what I'm thinking. And so it just gets layered back into you have to begin with faith, and faith comes through works. And
yeah, if you begin with faith, then you're not basing it on anything that's solid. You're not basing it on any evidence, any work. Well, you say works, but heck, you could do works for any particular religion, even the religions that he calls false. You can have faith in a false religion, then you can have any religion can be false.
Right. And one of the things that pops up every so often is you would know them by their fruits.
Mm-hmm.
And so the first thing that comes to mind is, so does that mean someone who is, say, any other religion, let's just say they're...
But they're a good person.
Really a good person. They could be a Jainist. Let's say they're a Jainist.
Mm-hmm. Well, so, look at... what's his name? In India, he was a nonviolent leader... protests.
Gandhi. Gandhi. Yeah.
I mean, look at his works. He brought an entire nation out of from under British rule, and he did it by nonviolent means. That's great works.
Yeah.
But we can't know him by his works,
right? And according to the Bible, take it back. So there's one part that says that they will basically rest until the day of resurrection. So one way has you believing that they'll be on the ground waiting until resurrection, and then they'll be judged.
Uh-huh.
And then others would have you believe that
you're judged
immediately. Just go. Mm-hmm. So it's I'm not a scholar. I don't claim to be. But
well, the thing about it is, anybody. I mean, you can be a scholar on a religion. In other words, you can study the history of a religion and know it very well, and know facts about the religion and how it has progressed through time. But when you're talking about the afterlife, there is no scholar on the afterlife.
Right.
Nobody knows anything about the afterlife.
Right.
When you're dead, you don't come back. I'm sorry. It just doesn't happen. Matter of fact, 200 years ago, David Hume wrote that to be able to accept a miracle, you would have to believe that it's more likely that the laws of the universe were changed or bent or broken than that somebody made it up, lied, or was mistaken. And which is more likely? We know that people make things up all the time, that they lie, that people make mistakes, but we certainly don't have any examples of the laws of the universe, the physical laws of the universe, being broken or bent.
Right. There's that example also, just even the how might you measure something like that?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've heard ways that would suggest, well, since we can't say really physically detect something that isn't otherwise physically detectable, there are speculative ways, purely open to conjecture, that you could try to test for something. Say, for instance, you could pray for something and have everyone pray for something, mm-hmm. and if a thing happened, there are methods maybe we could try.
Well, they have been tried.
Been tried. And there was that case study where so many people were prayed for,
mm-hmm.
and then opposite.
Right. They had what they call a double-blind study where people were praying for patients who went through open-heart surgery, and they had people that they knew that they were being prayed for, people that didn't know they were being prayed for, and people that I can't remember, but it was the results that were interesting. There was no difference between the people that people that were being prayed for and didn't know it, people that were being prayed for and did know it, and people that weren't being prayed for, period. And there was no difference between the three, except for the group that were being prayed for and knew it did differently. They had more complications. It's almost like they were trying too hard to to prove religion and prayer to be working, so they tried too hard to get better quickly and had more complications afterwards. But the people that didn't know about it, both the group that was being prayed for and the people that weren't being prayed for, did it equally well. So that was, I mean, that right there is a proof of sorts. It's evidence, particularly, that religion, I mean, that prayer doesn't work.
Yeah, and also there's the matter of intercessory prayer. You know, if it goes to go back to your argument, I think, made some weeks ago. If something has the property of omniscience, then everything that will possibly could have or is will ever happen, any possible infinite number of multiverses, that any possibility is known. Hence the definition, the dictionary definition, or any definition
omniscience.
Of omniscience. Mm-hmm. So praying would do nothing other than, well, it wouldn't do anything.
Yeah, there are several ways of approaching that. You could say, if you pray for something, you're telling God he doesn't really know what's best for you.
Right.
Two, you're telling him, well, you're saying that if he's omniscient, that he already knows what you want. He just wants to hear you ask for it. You know, if he really wants you to pray, he wants to hear you beg for it.
What does that say about the character?
Right. But if he already knows everything and you're asking for something else, you know, you're double guessing God, second guessing him. And you're also asking him to break his plan. Because if it's in his plan, you don't need to ask for it. And if it's not in his plan, asking for it doesn't matter. So prayer is useless in either way.
And there's that, where's that line that Jesus was praying, and he said, you know, let this cup pass, but nonetheless, let thy will be done. But which really, you know, it's kind of an emotional moment in the context of it, but really you're saying nothing.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I mean,
if you're going to say, yeah, thy will be done anyway, why ask anything previous to that?
Right. You know, and you may as well just, everything is an autoplay.
You know? And the thing about it is, you know, people have demonized Jewish people for centuries because they theoretically, in the Bible, they killed Jesus. You could actually say that Hitler was implementing the plan to wipe out the Jews because they killed Jesus. Matter of fact, one of his lines in his book was, I am carrying on the Lord's work by doing this. It was killing the Jews. When if they didn't kill Jesus, there would be no sacrifice, no redemption, and no eternal life. So, I mean, we can't have it both ways, but apparently they want to.
Right. Everything had to go a certain way, otherwise.
Yeah. And Judas was a good guy then, because if it hadn't been for him, Jesus wouldn't have been sacrificed. So, it makes no sense. So much of this religion is just nonsense. Like, when God was in the burning bush, and he asked Moses to go free his people, it's like the very next day, Moses and his wife were leaving a tavern to continue their journey to go release his people, when God shows up and tries to kill Moses. What's going on there? And the only way that Moses escaped God's, you know, murderous plan, but she took a sharp stone and circumcised their son, took the bloody end and threw it at Moses' foot and said, Moses, what a bloody husband you are to me. And God went on his way. I mean, he left him on his journey. Let him go. How much sense does that make?
Is this like an avatar that escaped God for a moment, just went on a psycho streak or something, or
I don't know. Anyway, there's so much that just doesn't make sense.
Right.
Anyway, let's get back to your friend. Did you have anything else that you wanted to add to that?
Well, really, I think it was interesting, and for anyone else who's listening, I'm sure probably had this a similar situation, maybe. It's even how to. I'm having struggles with how to approach it.
With him,
right? How to approach family, friends? How to approach that kind of thing? Mm-hmm. Because you face being ostracized. You face the connections that you have. People, they make the religious identity. They make the religion a part of their worldview and a mm-hmm. part of their identity to the point that they can't separate the two.
Yeah.
And if you say something about the religion, you're attacking them. And
You could take the tack that they attacked you first just by bringing it up, knowing right. that you're an atheist. They were on the offensive because, you know, they know you're a non-believer. They bring it up. What are they trying to accomplish? Now, to take my stance on it, I don't bring it up. You know, I'm happy to go along without. I mean, I'm an out atheist. I'm a very outspoken atheist. Everybody knows I'm an atheist in my private life. And we just don't discuss religion if the people are religious. Now, I'll post whatever I want to on my Facebook page. If they don't like it, then they can find another Facebook page. It's my page.
Right.
It's for my speech.
Right.
But I have an uncle like you got on there just recently. I posted an article about the separation of church and state, and he blasted me for even bringing up atheism on my own page. Hmm. Now, I haven't defriended him yet, but I very well may. But, I mean, it's that kind of thing that they can say whenever they want to about the religion at any time that they want to. But if you bring it up, you know, you're at fault. But anyway, right. generally, out in public, at work, I don't bring it up. And I consider it an open invitation to confront them if they bring it up to me. But that's self-defense. I mean, why would they bring it up to me if they know that I'm an atheist? I like to say I have a black belt in karate for, you know, for physical defense, but I'm certainly not going to sit and be quiet when somebody verbally attacks me or attacks, you know, my position.
Yeah, and it depends on who it is, right? Because, for instance, other family members how they act has no reflection, really. It depends on who it is, because other people have. For all intents and purposes, you could say they're great people.
Mm-hmm.
They're very,
right.
you know, but they happen to be religious, but they don't tend to act in anything of the precepts that the religion, you know, commands, whether they know it or not.
Uh-huh.
And so in such cases, in recent years, I've kind of taken the approach of, well, I'm not trying to out and anti-proselytize, I guess, to disseminate information if there seems to be they're not doing any harm.
Mm-hmm. Or have no malice against you.
Right. Mm-hmm. It's just, they're going through the motions, it's what they're brought on.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they're being good people.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But it's when people start bringing it up, and that's when, you know, they'll get on.
Right.
You know.
Well, yeah, I'm not going to give them a hard time and say, if I sneeze and they say, God bless you, no right. big deal, that's cultural. I mean, they're not trying to start something. I'm talking about when they are. When they're actually trying to proselytize me, mm-hmm. and they know my position, it would be just as bad as if I tried to bring them to my position. You know, while we were talking about sports or TV or actors or actresses, you know, that type of thing. Why would I broach that subject on somebody and challenge them when we're just sitting there being social, you know, or working together for that matter?
Yeah, it seems like it becomes a point of obsession sometimes to where. I'm sitting next to someone who doesn't believe. Now all of a sudden this has become contentious.
Mm-hmm.
When I think people escape the big picture. We're all people living in a world, living in a universe, living in, as far as we can tell, a universe which is not hospitable to us.
Mm-hmm.
And let's all try to make it the best life we can. But it just seems to be an obsession on... They're not following my gods.
Yeah.
I need to change this.
They're not validating
right.
my God. They're
right.
not validating
right.
my position or my religion. Matter of fact, back in the, 1700s, early 1800s, when they had, like, the Spanish Inquisition and stuff, saying that you don't believe or even letting it not be known is enough to throw you in prison and then end up being tortured or killed. Thankfully, that time has gone for the most part. But there are still countries that do that. I mean, you can face the death penalty in Saudi Arabia, in Afghanistan, probably Iraq, and some of the African nations. Yeah. So it's still going on.
You just mentioned that some months ago, right, there was, and I hate to quote without reading where it was, but here just some months ago, there was someone in the Middle East, it was one of the first time I'm aware of it, a woman, she was charged on blasphemy rules some several years ago,
yeah.
And it was delayed, and they finally came off the delay and concluded that they would be killed for blasphemy laws.
Yeah, it took a long time to reach that decision, but they did. Yeah, do you know what happened?
Well, I didn't follow up on it because I was a bit put off by it. I didn't want to follow up on it.
Yeah,
but I'm
afraid of what you might find.
That's as far as I read about it, and just for having a different opinion on a religion, you know, they'll kill you.
Right. Yeah. There's a meme going around, and it's kind of true, I guess. It says minority rights in a Muslim country. You know, they demand in non-Muslim countries, Muslims demand their minority rights, but in Muslim countries, there are no minority rights or very few. Now, you do get some rights if you happen to be a Christian or a person of the book, is that what they call them? But you still have to pay the non-believer tax in humility to be able to live in an Islamic country. Non-believers are simply not tolerated. Well, let's get into the bottom of the hour. I think we probably need to take a musical break. We'll come back after this and talk about the clubs that we have here in Knoxville, the TV shows, that type of thing that you might be interested in. I'm going to play Set Your Monster Free by Quiet Company. I think you'll enjoy it. After this short message from the Rationalists of East Tennessee.
Do you find stories of talking snakes laughable? Do you prefer the scientific method over supernatural beliefs? Are you concerned about religious leaders and organizations imposing their values and rules on your body, your family, and the rest of our society? Well, take comfort in the fact that you're not alone. The Rationalists of East Tennessee meets weekly for fellowship and provides a forum for people who support skeptical thinking and rational discussion of these and other issues. To find out more information or to find out about our next meeting, visit us on the web at www.rationalists.com.
Oh, daughter, I once thought that I had angels in my room. They were sleeping on my fan while I was dreaming of you. And daughter, I once had such desire to believe that our lives had been planned out by an unseen deity. But you don't have to waste your time holding on to beautiful lies. Daughter, I once knew that everything that I believed, it was good and fair and true and consistent with my needs. But daughter, I am wrong almost as often as I'm right. So daughter, just be strong enough to make up your own mind, 'cause you don't have to waste your time holding on to beautiful lies. No, you don't have to waste your time.
And we're back. I'm Doubter 5, and this is Digital Free Thought Radio Hour. And always stop the music about that time, or try to. We're broadcasting live from WOZO 103.9 LPFM, right here in Knoxville, Tennessee. Doubter 5 and River.
Hello.
And we've been talking about religion, of course. We've been talking for about a half an hour about conversation you've been having with your friend, who's a pastor.
Right.
And we'll be getting back to that in just a minute. First, I want to talk about the TV show that we have here in Knoxville, and the atheist and free thinker communities that are live and thriving in the city. The atheist TV show is called Free Thought Forum, and you can find it every Tuesday between 5 and 6 o'clock on Comcast Channel 12, Charter Channel 192. Or you can watch it streaming online at ctvknox.org. That's ctvknox.org. Also, if you'd like to find an archive of these shows, we have a fan that happens to be recording these shows and posting them on YouTube. You can go to YouTube and look for Free Thought Forum Knoxville. That's three words, as free thought is just one word. If you're interested in getting involved in the show, come to any ASK or RET meeting and talk to us about it. You could be our next live TV co-host. There's the ASK, which I just mentioned, which is the Atheist Society of Knoxville. Founded in 2002, it now has over 650 members. You can find it online at knoxvilleatheist.org. And you can meet them. You can join them at their meetup near Pella City Campus at Don Gallo's. We'll be at Don Gallo's this Tuesday for happy hour from about 5:30 to 7 or 8, depending how long it goes, for food, drink, conversation, and fun. Everyone is welcome, but as long as you don't preach, proselytize, provoke, or punch, thank you, Matt Delahunty, you're welcome to join us. Then there's the Rationalists of East Tennessee. They've been around for over 20 years. RET has bi-weekly presentations and discussions at the Pellissippi State Campus near Hardin Valley Road. You may remember the Rationalists of East Tennessee, or RET, for the billboards that we put up saying, if you don't believe in God, you're not alone. Even that was too much for some of the local religious folks. One business owner or property owner even made Lamar Advertising move our billboard because they were so sensitive about the idea. Anyway, RET meets the first and third Sunday in the Goins Administration Building Cafeteria Annex at the Pellissippi Campus near Pellissippi Parkway. You can go to the website, rationalist.org, click on directions to find more information about how to find the place. Then there's the Sunday Assembly, which started in England just a couple years ago and has spread around the world. It's a no-God church setting for those who have had enough of religion but still like the fellowship of a church-type gathering. They meet the fourth Sunday of each month, they probably met today, down at the International Building in downtown Knoxville. Then there's the Secular Student Alliance, which has programs to give camaraderie and community to any free-thinking high school or college student that would like to be involved in the free thought movement or just find secular companionship. And we all need that, especially here in the Bible Belt. Mm-hmm. So if you're a high school student or a college student and you would like to start a club that celebrates reason, free thought, science, and secularism in general, look up online, go to Google and Google Secular Student Alliance to find out more about how to do that. Okay, I guess that's about it. Let's get back to your topic. You've been making some notes while we were breaking there. Where can you pick us up at?
Well, I think we were talking just maybe about discussion and discussing things how they become passionate or dispassionate. Or dispassionate things become passionate. And I wrote some notes down here that it's interesting, and for the people listening, I think probably a lot of the same experiences, when you're trying to just discuss things that we can point to in reference, such as Francis Collins, the
the
Crick genome, and Collins, the DNA,
project,
the sequencing of human DNA.
Mm. And we have these bits. We've learned so much about evolution in the past 50 years, and we have everything before it.
Mm-hmm.
And you try to bring these up and just talk about them in a dispassionate light.
Uh-huh.
And you're immediately met with defensive hostility because uh-huh. you're challenging their worldview. It's not just their belief, it's their worldview.
You make a good point. One point I would like to make is that people who question fossils and evolution, I tell them, if you took all the fossils that we have, all of the fossils that we found anywhere in the world, threw them in the ocean, we would still have enough information from DNA alone to prove that evolution is true. Matter of fact, there used to be a family, class, phylum breakdown of the animal kingdom. But we've had to rewrite that because of the information that we found in DNA of all the species on the world. So we have enough information there to trace lineages and relationships between all of the living organisms on the earth, all the way back down to the lowest single-celled animals, to know that evolution is true and how we came to be here. We don't even need fossils, but they're good supplementary evidence for evolution.
Yeah, transitional fossils as well. And, you know, there's a good thought experiment, I think, that when talking to people about evolution, and there seems to be a gut check reaction, and that is, well, all these things didn't happen by random, but it's not random.
No, it's natural selection.
It's over time. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Things are chosen.
Yeah.
That's right for adaptation. It's anything but random.
Right. Well, you have random mutation, right, which is caused by a lot of things, mistakes in copying DNA, nuclear decay, cosmic rays mm-hmm. coming in from stars. All of these things can hit DNA, hit molecules in DNA, and cause them to break and or copy wrong. Now, those are random mutations. There's no rhyme or reason about which one gets hit first or which one doesn't, that type of thing. However, once you have a DNA that has been altered, then the environment takes over and either punishes that change or rewards that change. And if it's rare that it rewards a change, but if it does, then you have a change in the organism, which may very well over time lead to a change in the species itself, and so much that it can no longer interbreed with the old species. Take for instance, the old a white moth in England. The thing about a white moth is, you know, they may have lots of children, lots and lots of children. They get eaten by predators, birds, spiders, that type of thing. But then when the Industrial Revolution came along, all the soot came from the chimneys and coated the trees and coated the buildings, coated everything. So a white moth laying on a dark tree bark or tree root is easily seen by a predator and eaten. So any DNA change that happened to change one to a darker species, well, that one would live because it's laying on a dark surface. Therefore, the ones that lived would make more children, they would mate, they would live to an age where they could have progeny. Those progeny would be darker generally because of their evolutionary adaptation. And then they would have children, and before you know it, most of the white moths are gone, have been replaced by a dark moth. I mean, and these changes over time can create a new species of moth.
And we can even, one of the biggest things I see to it that it's, again, kind of gut check struck and down so much is, well, this is over millions of years, and how can you, but look at dogs. I mean, we have been the guiding hand, our ancestors and our ancestors' ancestors, mm-hmm. about the different dog breeds.
That's artificial selection.
Right.
Yeah. But even in a few thousand years, we've changed a common wolf to, hundreds of different species of dogs. Of course, they can still interbreed generally, but there are some that can't now.
Right.
And there's also, a lot of people don't know this, but there's actually two types of dogs that the current dogs have evolved from. One is the wolf, everybody knows that, but foxes were a different species even back then. They didn't come from wolves. They evolved on their own. They evolved their own dog-like characteristics on their own. It's kind of strange, so But you ever try to domesticate a fox?
No.
It doesn't
no.
work very well. There, yeah. There's some, you can go on YouTube and look up some attempts at domesticating foxes that happened in Russia, and the results weren't very good.
One could say that cats have domesticated us, though.
That's true. That's true. Yeah.
No, I'm a cat person, so I guess, I can see it. But, I mean, you know, there were worship in the ancient times, so there's, you know, I think I figured it out. But, comedy aside, I guess. But, and I guess another thing that comes up is even when it comes down to claims and asserting things, and I'll be, you know, that's the thing about intellectual integrity, is when you don't know, you don't know. Why would you say you do know? I guess there are maybe reasons you can think of when you would, but if you're being honest about it, if you don't, you don't know, you don't know.
Yeah.
So when I ask someone, well, how do you know that? And they'd say, well, it says it in the Bible, or it says that in the Quran, or it says that in the Bhagavad Gita.
Uh-huh.
Well, okay, that was written, but I could write a manuscript for you right now that says, I have the power to fly and crush universes. Does that make it what?
Yeah, and we don't know who wrote anything that's shown up in the Bible. We have no names of the original authors or any of the original texts. But yet, since it's in a translation of an earlier thing, and it's considered the Word of God, he'll take it on faith. And that's what makes it so certain to him that it's true. But it's utterly lacking in reason for that.
And it's almost like a defense against within the scriptures to try to persuade people that, you know, free thinking is, you can't do that. You know, lend not in your own wisdom.
Right.
You know, the fool says in his heart there is no God, and, you know, he can do no good deeds.
If I were writing a book that I didn't want people to question it, I would tell them, don't lean on your own understanding.
Right, right.
We haven't given out the number yet, but if you'd like to, we've still got about 15 minutes left. If you'd like to call in, the number here is 865-333-5937. That's 333-5937. We welcome your call and or questions and or comments. So you were talking about studying the history of religion and talking about the certainty that they have in that.
Right.
What's so funny to me is that religion likes to hijack so much stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, they hijacked the winter solstice and turned it into a religious holiday. You know, it used to be just the changing of the seasons, the sun starting to move higher in the sky, days getting longer. People were celebrating that. It was all over the northern hemisphere. People were celebrating it, so they stuck their Jesus' birth on that day, so that we would then start celebrating at the time of his birth. But they also hijack the family. You know, Jesus himself said, you can't follow me unless you hate your mother and your father and your sister and your brother, and if you do not do that, you cannot be my disciple. So instead of that, they have what? A church where you got to call the priest your father, the nuns your sisters, and everybody else your family, you know. So they try to usurp that. They try to hijack that. There are several other things. If you think about it, you can see the examples. Matter of fact, I wrote an article about it. It's on my blog, digitalfreethought.com. Click on the blog button and then click on Religion Hijacks Everything to read more about it.
Well, that's a good point there with the brothers and the sisters. You know, taking familiar family structures and you're saying, well, okay, so people really want to hold on to this. They're not buying this whole concept of forget your family. Okay, so we'll bring in a father. We'll bring in a sister.
Right.
And, you know, it's comforting.
Yeah. And think about memes. You know, memes are what Richard Dawkins calls ideas, basically. Mm-hmm. Ideas have to struggle in the marketplace of other ideas, just like genes have to struggle against other genes in the marketplace of human organisms. But he says that good memes will propagate themselves over other memes. And what gets me is that the church has been using the religion to propagate the meme of the history of the Jewish people. I mean, if you take the big majority of Protestant and Catholic preachers here in the world, they know a heck of a lot more about the history of the Jewish people than they may know of their own history, their own like, let's say that you're Italian, of your own Italian history going back, you know, several thousand years. Italy may not be a good example of that because there's so many people who have documented the history of Italy, but like Scandinavia, Ireland, even England would go back a couple of centuries or a couple of millennia. But the Jewish people will take you back 2,500 years, and everybody learns their history at the expense of learning their own history. They've been hijacked.
Right, exactly. I mean, say if you were on a small island outside of maybe around, you know, Papua New Guinea or something,
mm-hmm.
and you have this rich culture, and all of a sudden you have missionaries who are coming down, and they want to spread the word. And so now you have a new agenda. Whereas before you were celebrating your rich culture going back many, many, many years.
Thousands of years,
And now it's become, well, this good book is all I need.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And from their perspective, that's the insidiousness of it,
mm-hmm.
is that from their perspective, they might be generally think, I'm doing good work. I'm
right.
spreading the word.
Uh-huh.
But two things come to mind. Have they really read the Bible? And do they really think they're actually doing? I mean, it's use. I've heard the phrase "useful pawns" or something like that. It's.
I don't know.
I've heard the phrase before that it. Someone doing something unwittingly, knowing that they're part of the problem.
They're a pawn.
Right.
Yeah.
Unwittingly.
Yeah.
No.
You don't have to go to Papua New Guinea. You can look at South America. You have the Aztecs, the Mayans, all of the native peoples of South America had rich culture and history, and then the Catholic Church came in, you know, with their conquistadors and their guns and their horses, and killed and burned. They killed the people, burned the history book, burned all of the language books that they had so they'd have to learn new language, and replaced their history with their own. They hijacked the history of an entire people, you know, many people. And made them learn that history instead.
Or was it 1700s? The Russians, fur traders, and they came over to the Aleutian Islands, 1700s, the peninsula of Alaska.
Yeah.
Now we're not, again, rich history, and the whole place became an orthodoxy going forward.
Right.
You know, and something, I'm sure we don't have time for it, but if we can even touch on it.
What's that?
Is that of something that always comes up. All that ties into it. When you start hitting on things such as evidence contrary to what they believe, and you can start backing it up, and not even that, even if you don't know all the things, no one really does, but if you just know enough, and you ask them enough questions, and they become uncomfortable, what seems to be the retreat is back to fear, and maybe even so far as the fear of hell, and then you have they might back up to, well, Pascal's wager, right? That's one of the obvious things.
Or fire insurance wager.
Right, yeah. Or the mafia deal, someone you know. Is
the mafia don.
Yeah.
Nice soul things. You got there. It'd be a shame anything happened to it.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that seems the kind of one of the backpedals to see often. And when you really start breaking down the dichotomy of it, it becomes less and less sensical why you'd have a model based off of that. But it's the first thing that comes up as well. You know, it's better than to risk it. It's best to just go ahead and go with it. You know, which God, which religion, which hell?
Right. Well, if the listener is not used to the claims of Pascal's wager, basically it says, if you don't believe in God and you're wrong, you go to hell. If you do believe in God and you're wrong and there's no God, nothing happens to you. It don't cost you anything. But if you don't believe in him, he is real, it's going to cost you your soul. You're going to be, you know, writhing forever and all that. But there's an awful lot wrong with that. First of all, it does cost you a lot if you believe in God and there isn't one. Think of all the money you have to give to the church. Think of all the time that you've spent. Think about all the power that you've given the church over you. Think about us committing yourself and your family to a life in bondage, basically, to the church. Think about the people who have flown planes into buildings. They didn't think that their religion was harmful when they joined it. All they heard were the good things about the unconditional love that would be involved. Think about the people in Jonesburg, Guyana, who not only killed themselves with poison, but gave poison to their own children. You know, they joined a religion because they wanted love and understanding and spiritual release. What did they get? They got death. And the people who were Christian Scientists who let their children die by praying for them when they get sick rather than giving them even minimal medical care. Religion has some real problems. Even if God is not real and you believe it, you've got an awful lot on your plate that you'll have to turn over to the church or just live with. Now, this is wager is saying that we should say that we believe in God. I mean, that's the whole wager. You know, you should believe. How do you make yourself believe? How do you make yourself right. believe in something that you don't?
Right.
And if we don't believe and we say we do, wouldn't God, who is omniscient, know that we're just trying to lie and get our way into heaven? And even if God's not listening are we supposed to say that we do believe and live with a lie for the rest of our lives? Lie to our family and our friends and ourselves, you know, for your whole life? That's a pretty serious deal. Anyway, look up Pascal's Wager. There's an awful lot of other reasons why it doesn't work. And you should take the time to get to know those reasons.
Yeah, and really, kind of leading off of that is the big point, the power point of the wager itself. What you're trying to avoid that is hell.
Mm-hmm.
What would it say if you really just break it down rather than just assuming? Well, this is what the book says. This is what the particular religion says. What does it really say that if you lived a good life, if you were helped other people, or tried to live by so many what you might consider virtues, or even if you just left people alone, whatever you did, if you tried to be good by people and by others and were honest, you just didn't happen to believe one religion or the other religion. Say Asatru is the correct one, you know. But you're just judged and now will be burning for all eternity because regardless what you did in life, you just didn't have, you happen to not believe.
Right.
Mm-hmm. What kind of system is that?
Mm-hmm.
The more you break it down, mm-hmm. it becomes nonsensical.
Yeah. We're getting real close to the top of the hour. Would you like to say a few last parting words and then we'll go ahead and go to the music and sign out?
I guess when it comes down to, and it's still a current issue, and I'm sure other people are going through it, when you have friends and family who are religious, it's sure, in one of those things, practice versus theory kind of thing, it seems easy enough to say, well, it's fine if it's brought up, I'll just say this and say that and we'll be fine. But when it comes down to it, it can become paralyzing to not be able to say what you want to say and question things and just have a decent conversation because you care about the people you're talking with. You don't want to offend them. You don't want to harm them. You don't want to cause them anguish. You'd like to help them. You want to bring. You're trying to spread knowledge to them, but you know if you say something, you'll cause them harm, or likelihood mm-hmm. you'll cause them mental stress. So you just avoid it,
yeah.
And it compounds and compounds.
Mm-hmm.
And in my own experience, what I'm finding more and more is that maybe it's not always the best time to just leap into to engage something, but at the same time, I would stress. Not forgoing your integrity and sticking to it. If people have experience with you, then that's experience they possibly didn't have with someone else who claimed to not believe. And then that makes it easier and easier and easier for other people to come along. So you're really doing everyone else a service if you're honest with yourself and honest with others about your non-belief.
Sure. Very good. And we're pretty much out of time, so I'll just leave with, remember, don't feel smug because you're a Christian or whatever. Everybody's going to some other religion's hell, so don't worry about it. The time to worry about it is when you have proof that it exists. We'll be with you next week at the same time. I hope to see you then. Bye-bye.